You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
A merch idea might be a t-shirt that says it's an Enoch thing you wouldn't understand.
And it's a Nephilim, like lowering his sunglasses and looking at presumably a
that's right.
human like, woman.
Check it out, our girls.
You want to have sex with our girls is really the t-shirt that we want.
Oh. Where was Eric? Where was Mr. Van Doneghan in this episode?
I know. You're going to be talking about angels and humans having sex. We need him.
He's the man.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Phalians.
Oh, I did not see that sudden twist on the...
I didn't intend that to happen. I just thought, what if I change the emphasis and it becomes like a different language?
Can you say it in Portuguese? Is there a Portuguese word for Phalians?
See, you guys asked me this last time.
Oh, did we?
It's a problem because I don't... First of all, the word aliens, I don't know the word aliens. So now I need to figure out what that is.
Extraterrestrials? Terrestrials de extra...
Extraterrestre. Oh, see, that's not good. I don't like that. Fail. Oh, it's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah, we're never going to make it in Portugal because it doesn't translate well.
Fault extraterrestre. No, it just doesn't. No, sorry. Okay.
In whatever language you, the listener, speak, this show is more like Ancient Phalians, but the popular, multilinguistic, and multi-alien race History Channel program, Ancient Aliens. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon R. Reynolds, a man who has gotten flooded once or twice and had to pay the price.
And I'm Toby Ball, the other host.
We are joined today once again by a recurring guest, Pedro Mendez. Hello, Pedro.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So glad to have you. Since the last time you were here, Toby bought the two of us a couple of prints of your incredible miniature work. And Toby sent it to me in an well, I received a cardboard tube in the mail, and the return address was G. Sukalos. And I thought, the man himself has been watching the show, got very excited. What could he be sending? And then I got very scared because I thought, maybe he's not a fan, and this is full of snakes.
You know what he would have sent you? He would have sent you that strange shaft that the diver at the Bimini Wall found. You know, the orb that was found near the Bimini Wall.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like this weird spear pointing at it. Sukalos would have sent you the spear.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty cool.
That would have been sweet.
But it was a poster, which I appreciated a lot more than any old crappy ancient alien artifact. Recommend checking your stuff out. We'll plug that at the end of the show. For now, today we're covering The Great Flood. That's season 9, episode 8. Guys, it first aired December 23rd, 2014, or as I like to call it, Christmas Eve Eve. You know what else happened on this date? A couple of things. One, the FDA revised a blood donation policy for gay men, changed a 31-year lifetime ban on blood donations from gay men, and replaced it with a 12-month abstinence requirement. So, you know, everybody can learn and everyone can grow.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Well, it's fun that it changed for the better and more open and tolerant. Toby.
Yep.
You don't think a year of abstinence would be sort of a negative negative and you're donating blood.
It's like, so what's going on? Our relationship, we're having some serious relationship problems. No, I'm just donating blood next March.
We're having a blood drive at work next year.
Yeah. Got to get ready. The other thing that happened was that the Keurig coffee machine got a big recall of 6.6 million machines after receiving 90 reports of burn injuries.
Wow.
Why are we covering this particular episode, The Great Flood? Well, it's because we're, as Pedro knows from having been on before, and as Toby resists, but nevertheless is true, we are a serious show. We're not like those other shows that just want to talk about minor floods. We're the only ones out here brave enough to talk about the Great Flood. What this episode is about, it is kind of grim, but not surprising, which is, as far as I can tell, aliens figure out that they've been having too much sex with human women here on Earth. And so they decide to essentially use comets to do the ET equivalent of clearing their search history by eradicating most of the humans on Earth.
If they had just used condoms instead of comets.
That's right.
Could have avoided the whole problem.
It's a
translation error, really.
Yep.
So we are talking about the Great Flood, which is fascinating as a cultural artifact because you can figure out that there was floods in the past if you look at it as a historical document of all the stories of floods. Or you can say, I don't know, it seems like there's something fishy going on with water. Great opening. Tsoukalos comes in.
One has to ask the question, what if Noah was one of the extraterrestrials?
No one has to ask that question. No one does.
But it does lead to one of the all-time favorite lines of mine from this entire series, which we'll get to when it shows up. It's a real banger. Okay. One of the best known stories of the Bible, variations of an ancient tale. You can find stories of the flood in Hindu teachings, Mesopotamian legends, Mesoamerican myths. And it basically involves the idea that God gets mad about something that people have done and decides to wash the sin away one way or another. Pedro, you look dubious already. We're not even 10 minutes into this thing and you're already dubious as hell.
Well, because it's this oversimplification of saying all these other cultures have these flood myths. One of the reasons why the Sumerians and the ancient Judeans have a similar flood myth is because the ancient Judeans got it from the Sumerians. They were in Babylon. They studied the same texts. Even the Mesopotamians had three different versions over a long period of time. There was the Sumerian, there was something called the Atrahasis, and then the Gilgamesh epic. And they were all slightly different for each other because they were like hundreds of years apart. And they actually had to do with two different gods, actually a big group of gods, but basically one god who was like, I'm fed up with these people. One of them, in fact, they're too loud. That was the reason. Mm-hmm. He's like, they're partying. It's too much. And I'm going to get rid of them. And the other god was like, hey, don't. And so when the flood happened, the other god comes along and is like, hey, listen. Just build a boat and put some stuff on it. You're going to be fine. You know, the story evolved over time. And eventually by the time of the Babylonian exile, you have the Judean elites going there for almost 100 years, hearing this story and crafting it for their own people. You guys have talked about this before. There's actually interesting history buried inside this show. The shift from many gods against each other to God against man, to God against people, right? And God being like, listen, in the Judean story, I have a standard. You guys have broken that standard. I'm going to punish you. And humans trying to figure out, why would you do this? That's actually a shift in human culture and human thinking. Like, we start to become more central to the story. We literally make a god in our image. Whereas the previous ones, it was like, just these random gods were just doing stuff that we don't understand. That's what's actually fascinating, not this nonsense.
Yeah. And we sort of return to that. At the end of the day, this is a climate story and they were reacting to, you know, history has tended to play out for us as far as we can remember in such and such a way. Well, and then there's a drought cycle or a flood cycle or whatever. Everything changes. They go, why is this happening? And then they try and figure out what the meaning of it is. And they look at supernatural things. Now, by comparison, we have all this science, which some people like to argue is not really valid science, but science about climate change. And, you know, the end result is the same. Like, well, what do we do about those changes? How do we change our cities? How do we change our behavior? How do we adapt to this changing world? Like, that anxiety is basically the same as it ever has been and seems like it's fundamental. That's the first and last story.
it's a key thing that the show ignores, which is that these stories are told by people at a certain time for people of a certain time. And it changes mm-hmm. over time. What I find interesting, though, in these first few minutes of the show, I kind of wanted to say, guys, aliens? Where are the aliens?
Yeah.
It took them a long time to get to the aliens. I was like, this is just a really crappy biblical history show so far.
Yeah. They like to keep you on your toes. When are they going to deploy the aliens? Toby, any thoughts on this?
Not yet. I'm keeping my powder dry.
So they have to establish some sort of scientific imperative for connecting myth, right? Sometimes they'll go straight into aliens. Pedro, as you said, in this case, they go to the Holocene Impact Working Group in the Indian Ocean, talking about this asteroid impact, which there's a great animation of the impact, and then like a surfer's eye view of the tsunami breaking on shore. I love it.
Yeah, the Holocene Impact Working Group, it's a group of, I think, six scientists
yeah.
from Australia and the U.S. And even on their 2003 era website, they say, well, you know, we think there are more meteors hitting the Earth than most scientists think. It's like, all right, so you're adding yourself as basically crackpots just to begin with. I assume there's interns who must just search the web for like contrarian scientists.
This is the thing about the show, and this is so true of so much paranormal belief, which is that they will mock what they call mainstream science
yeah.
or conventional science or whatever. But they will then say, scientists believe, or some scientists believe, as if they do want that validation. Do you know what I mean? Guys, you're either throwing this out or you're not throwing it out. Because when they say, later on in the episode, they mention, at least this one scientist believe.
Yes.
I would no.
Yeah. Or it said, at least one archaeologist thinks it was destroyed by a flood. Is that archaeologist Giorgio Tsoukalos? Can you name this person?
Oh, I guess it's up to me to answer that question, Toby. Thank you very much.
You're hosting.
What I really want to talk about is microbeads. I know I like to talk about great floods. I want big floods, but I want the smallest beads that money can buy. Looking at the connective tissue of the show, the logic such as it is, they say, well, here's this 18-mile wide crater, blah, blah, blah. There's some chevrons. It hardly matters. But there are microbeads. Now, why do we care about that? Because that also shows up in Pumapunku, way across the ocean in modern-day Bolivia. And if you believe that there's microbeads in the Indian Ocean and that they're in modern Bolivia, that suggests that the entire planet was flooded somehow. If that is true, if you can have a flood that floods the whole planet, which seems like a lot of water, but if that's the case, do you have something that hits the planet? A lot of water gets thrown up, but also a conflagration. So it's not just a great flood, it's also a great big fire, which I kind of like. And their theory is the firestorm, which the gods bring down because they're mad, the heat of that vaporizes the ice sheets, which again is like, how do we tie in some modern climate change-y stuff so that it sounds legit? Well, people know that if the ice sheets melt, the sea levels will rise. And, you know, maybe 40 days and 40 nights of that shit, as one of those books tells us.
Yeah, the Sumerians, it was only 7. These guys are acting like it was 40 days. Like it was like, no, it was 40 days.
Yeah.
Like it's written. We know it.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that? There was an article in the New Yorker several years ago. They found some, I think, fossils in Ohio. And they were sort of, from that evidence, recreating the impact of the meteor in the Gulf of Mexico. It was not ice sheets instantaneously melting or conflagrations or whatever. It was mostly just like fast moving water, lot of debris, and just no hope for anything that's in its way. It was just like this very violent event. It was quick too. It moves quickly and then leaves devastation in its wake. So anyway, only just to say that there are people who've actually spent the time trying to figure out what actually happens in those situations rather than just trying to interpret like holy books and a little bit of climate change or whatever and CGI it into something that you can relate to aliens somehow.
The thing that has me wondering, and I've worked in media pretty much my whole life, mostly in radio, but a little bit in television. And I picture them trying to come up with these episodes because I think from a listener's point of view or a viewer's point of view, it's almost like they're just discovering these things yeah. and one leads to the next. And it's almost like it just unfolds in front of them, right? The story, but it's all crafted, it's all created. And it actually reminds me of parties as a teenager when you're all high and you're all being like, then we'll do this. And then then we'll do this. And you think it's the most, and then you wake up the next morning and you're like, that was really stupid. Like, yeah, that was really, really stupid. We're never going to be able to do those things. And I think the writing room for this show must be the same thing. It starts with like one insane idea, and then they just add another one and another one and another one, because no one's going to call them on it. So let's go.
Yeah.
And I think when Blake Smith was on one of your episodes, he said, if this was just a what-if show,
yeah,
if they just parked reality, they were like, we know that this is true, but imagine, as like a plot for a sci-fi movie. Awesome. But what I felt bad about in this episode, because you guys interviewed, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Sabina
Maleoko.
That was, for a listener who has not heard that episode, go back and listen to that episode, because that was amazing. Like, peeling back the curtain on what really goes on and her involvement and stuff. But they cut off the poor woman. She was talking about how like there may have been one single flood, and then it cuts off. And it's like, and she was about to say, yeah, but there were actually a whole bunch of small floods that people, and that's where they came up with their stories.
Yeah.
Oh, I felt bad for her.
You know, I've said before that I think the best way for me to kind of make sense of this is sort of like this co-created alternative history project, but trying to prove that it actually happened is
exactly
just like kind of ridiculous.
And as Sabina said in that episode, it went from, oh, this is just some harmless fun, into like, no, no, this is teaching people how to believe misinformation.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, of the hundreds, or close to 200 people who are working on More Like Ancient Faelians, our show, they don't like when we talk about the production too much of the show. But we are recording this on September 23rd, 2025, which is the rapture. I mean, right now, that's we're right. seeing this thing play out. And if you spend any time on social media, you'll know that that real-time myth-making has been happening. Like, I opened up Instagram last night, like 10 p.m. or something, and there were people who were reporting on wherever it was going to be. You know, it was like dawn in such and such, and they're like, are we waiting for reports? Obviously, those people, those influencer types, are like trying to keep people engaged, right? Like, and how do you do that? If nothing's happening, you just sort of say what time it is in various places. We just need to get to the next moment of this story. We just need to sort of keep pushing things along. And, you know, if by the end of this episode, 10% of the planet or whatever has vanished, then I will feel like a real asshole.
It'll just be the evangelical Christians. It's okay.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's the thing. People selling their cars, whatever, all this crazy shit's happening.
Is that really happening?
Supposedly, there's a guy that's like, it was like scamming a bunch of rich evangelicals. Like, if you're going to get rid of that stuff, give it to me. The logic that informs what's going on today, or illogic or whatever, it's promulgated by this mass media, by the refinement of Instagram looking good and delivering this algorithm and all of this stuff. And then just the credulity that is allowed by shows like this, obviously. Influencers, charlatans, con folk are obviously out there like trying to get the clicks, trying to get the likes because it's good for them, whether they believe it or not. And unlike the Ancient Aliens format, which is like someday, you know, every episode ends, someday we're going to find out when our ancestors come back from the stars and yada, 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 continue to have sex with us or whatever it is. In this case, by the end of today, we're going to see a great example of cognitive dissonance where people don't vanish. And so you'll see a whole new shoal of videos and things come out that are like, so here's what happened. Here's what really happened.
See, where I actually feel hope in all of this is, as much as all this has happened, the misinformation and conspiracy theory and so on, there's also been a rise of people desperate for facts and for critical thinking. And in fact, I think the knowledge, the ability that we have to be critical thinkers is better than it's ever been for people who are interested. I think there are better tools than have ever existed. Like in my own life, growing up in the 70s and 80s, believing everything. Like, I honestly believed the Bermuda Triangle was real and that actual airlines avoided it.
Yeah.
I believe that there was basically quicksand everywhere.
Yes. Quicksand and giant clams at the bottom of the ocean.
Yes. The books were in my library at my school. So it was like, there must be some truth to this. And now it's very easy to get to the bottom of the things. It's also very easy, I know, to go in the other direction, and many people are, but that gives me hope, because as bad as things are, we're landing stuff on other planets. Vaccines in like months, not years or decades. Like, we're also doing amazing things. So naively try to be optimistic.
Are you trying to make a dig at me and Brandon for living in the U.S. with that?
No, I was like, that's the most Canada-ass thing I've ever heard anybody say. Optimistic in the year 2025. And I would like for Toby to issue the rebuttal for that, the official cynical rebuttal on how great things are.
Well, I think you just have to tune into Joe Rogan interviewing RFK Jr. and, windmills give you cancer.
There you go.
Like people in their solar powered planes, when it gets cloudy, they just drop out of the sky. You know, the batteries in boats are so heavy, they just sink. But you're in Canada where it's much nicer.
Slightly.
And where is it called paracetamol up there? Tylenol? Paracetamol?
Exactly.
America, baby.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Where do we go from here? Where were we before? Oh, yeah. So planet gets blasted by a thing and then the shit melts and so on and so forth. The narrator, Clotworthy Love Me, comes in.
According to those scientists who subscribe to this theory.
Now, Clotworthy tends to be fairly measured, but every now and again, they let a little shade come through. And that was some shade. According to those scientists who subscribe to this theory. Jesus, man. Walk over their grave while you're at it. Move on to the Ucello horizon. So apparently this is about charcoal. A couple of dudes going to Belgium. One of the most peculiar aspects of when they go out into the field is you get the impression that some of these people have never been outside doing anything. Everything seems so strange to them. Yes. Like they are truly aliens. And they're just like, and this looks like charcoal. And then he rubs his fingers together and therefore proves that it is charcoal.
At the top of the peat layer, there is some charcoal.
Right.
Why would you send a second-tier ancient astronaut theorist to Belgium? Just send a freaking cameraman and take some video. It's not that interesting. It's just striations of dirt.
They spent a fair bit of money. They sent a crew. They sent people. Somebody probably had to take a plane. And there were like quite a lot of $1,000 spent to get that footage. And they probably thought, oh, it's going to look amazing. And the footage may have come in and they were like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
It's just these two guys touching sand.
All right.
Brandon's disappointed. He's like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, listen, this is the kind of science dork.
That was the part you bought?
No, I love a layers. I love a layers thing. Antarctica ice cores and the shit they pull out of there. I mean, I'm always excited because, it's like tree rings. Like that's magic. Like you can tell how old a tree is by counting the rings. Because there's a lot you can learn about how healthy the land was at any given point in time. Like, so there's a lot of cool stuff. So I understand the idea of like being like, this is all charcoal, everybody. And if you can find it all over the world, then Bob's your uncle instead. It's just a couple of guys standing in a Belgian ditch.
Well, but it's like, what are you trying to prove?
Well, and you have Collins who's trying to tie it together. This is physical evidence of that flood, of that conflagration. This is your absolute evidence that this event took place.
This is the evidence of the cataclysm.
Do these folks know, do they know what the word evidence means? I'm starting to suspect they don't actually know what the word evidence means.
Pedro, he was rubbing his fingers together with charcoal.
It just means stuff.
But, they've sort of painted themselves into a corner because it's the Great Flood. It's as big as it gets. It must flood the whole world. That's certainly the story that would seem to be the case in the tale of Noah. So you have to be able to find evidence of it all over the world. But, that's just implicit in that story. And it is funny to think about, in the Bible, God never does like local catastrophes. Like if you're just doing a little bit, I mean, I guess, you know, there's Sodom and Gomorrah, like he blasts individual cities for very specific reasons. But in general, if it's like, I'm really mad this time, you can't be like, ah, it was just part of the Fertile Crescent. It wasn't the whole thing. What's the point of doing it everywhere? And they don't really talk about that. So it's like, now the whole world drowned.
They don't talk about it. What about the Nephilim? Come on.
No, it's true. But I'm just saying they can't prove it in one place. They have to be like Belgium and everywhere else is where evidence exists.
But this is, of course, the great irony. And I realize as this goes on, it's like, why are we even arguing about this stupid show? Because they don't even know what they're doing.
That's what this show is about,
though. We're trying to find logic about it, but which is fun. But it was the world. To the ancient Judeans, the river delta where they were and Egypt and a little bit further, that was the world. There was no awareness of this entire planet, of people absolutely everywhere, of animals everywhere. So when they talk about like it's actually seven animals of every kind, the ones that you like sacrifice and eat, it's the unclean ones you only bring two of. But anyway, they're not thinking of all the animals because they don't know all. They're like, they look around, there's like, well, there's goats, there's pigs, it won't be too hard. You know what I mean? So in a sense, they were talking about the whole world, but their whole world was tiny at the time.
Yeah.
And so these buffoons trying to apply it to the actual whole world,
right?
That's where it's, no, that's not going to work.
I think there must be a real idolization of like Joseph Campbell, right? Somebody who's like gone around the world to try and collect stories and to figure out, and you know, some of that can be read as quasi-mystical Jungian stuff too, right? Where like if these stories recur, does that mean something fundamental about the existence of a soul or the like Noam Chomsky idea of like, you know, we're all wired in some way to tell stories, whatever that is. That's what they want. They want evidence all over the world. You know, the Hopi have this same story at around the same time as these guys. And, you know, they don't have that evidence. But if they could find it, then it's the justification for everything that's going on.
And this is why, like, I always come back to the, you know, often believers will say that skeptics are not open-minded. But it's ironic because an open mind is somebody who enters a situation attempting to leave behind their personal bias and without any preconceived notions. But if you go into a situation saying, we're going to prove that there was a great flood, you do not have an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to prove that all gods over the world are all the same God. You do not have an open mind. If you go into each culture, each story, each history, truly open, and be like, what were these people trying to say to their own civilization culture at the time? What does that express about them there? That's actually having an open mind. It's this episode specifically, it just gets more and more absurd because they are trying so hard to fit a square peg into a round hole. I'm looking at my notes for what's coming up and it's just amazing. Like how far they go.
They spend a little more time on this idea of something being rained down from the sky. We go to Laurel, Maryland, 2014. Top scientists from all over the world gather for the first international asteroid impact deflection assessment workshop. The planet would be destroyed by an asteroid before you could finish that extremely long name. And then one of my favorite animations in a long while. I love a dinosaur animation. In this case, you see the rocks raining down. And I swear to God, one of the dinosaurs gets bonked on the head and you see the rocks bouncing in the background. It looks like even in the animation, the rocks were foam. Like they couldn't even animate rocks with appropriate weight. Like a dinosaur would be like gonk. And then in the background, they're just sort of, looks like they're kind of made of rubber. Yes.
Oh, that's smarts.
Yeah.
It's better than sending two dudes to Belgium. Let's put it that way.
One of the great lines in this episode, it's they say scientists around the world are working tirelessly to redirect asteroids. No, no, they're not. No, there's some work being done, definitely, in trying to figure out where they are and if they're going to hit us and stuff. But the impression that they give is like, what was that movie, Armageddon or whatever? Yeah. Like, that's actually happening right now.
Yeah.
Not really.
They're working very tiredly at it. It's like,
exactly.
Wake up another day, go to the office, figure out about gravity tractors, which apparently ETs could use to guide a meteor toward Earth, which is fucking rude.
That's an interesting little twist.
This is what I mean. This is the writing room. Everyone's high and they're like, wait, what if they shot an astronaut or an asteroid at us? Yeah. And everybody else is like, yeah.
Dude.
Well, that was from a little story and film called Starship Troopers. Remember the aliens? That was their thing. They kept destroying world cities by shooting meteors. They were using some kind of contraption to guide meteors out of an asteroid belt around their planet, aim it at ours. And so
nothing lives in what was once called the Latin paradise.
Famously Buenos Aires.
What movie was this? Spy Kids?
A movie called Starship Troopers, Toby, which is a great film. It's a great
is
film.
It? Okay, it sounds awesome the way you described it.
It's a good satire. Oh. It's a good satire. Tied up in a neat bow by Rabbi Ariel Bar Zadok, who says,
"The flood was clearly contrived. It was sent by higher powers to correct things here on Earth."
This rabbi's been on many, many, many times.
Yeah.
So I recognize him and I'm like, no, 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 no. And it's like how he says, you know, and a meteor caused the flood. Wait, what? I actually had to like go back to the book of Genesis and be like, wait. And it's like, no, fountains from the great deep and the opening of the heavens. There was no cosmic impact. There's no mention of a meteor. I'm like, where are you pulling this from? And then I started to think, could it be our favorite? The book of Enoch.
Setting us up.
Yeah.
And this is where, yeah, the answer to so many of things is, why this happened? This happened because horny. Why the aliens are so horny and why they want those Earth women so bad.
Yeah.
They really
why do they want to have sex with our girls?
With our girls.
They had sex with some of our girls.
Why do they want to have sex with our girls? Mm. Mount Hermon, Lebanon, 1869. Sir Charles Warren discovers a sacred temple, hikes up to the top. That takes us into the Book of Enoch, which is where a band of renegade angels known as the Watchers came from the heavens in the distant past. The sons of God came down to earth. They were the shining ones, the Elohim. And then you have Jonathan Young. He explains very helpfully, those are fallen angels, and they found the women very attractive, and they married the women, or if they weren't the marrying type, they bonded with the women, which I don't know if that's psychosexual or supernatural, or it's just like, I don't know. We just bonded. You
kinky.
Know, yeah.
Yeah.
Kinky. Kinky stuff.
Sort of Netflix and chill type.
That's right. And the product of Netflix and chill in the ancient time, Toby, was what?
The Nephilim.
The Nephilim. Yeah. And that pissed God off pretty good.
God does not like the Nephilim.
No.
The Book of Enoch is this show's get out of jail free card. Whenever the show is not really going the direction that they want, turn to the Book of Enoch because you will find some nonsense that will give you exactly what you guys need.
If there was no Book of Enoch, ancient aliens would have to create it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, it's just the deus ex machina.
Yep.
Peter, does the Nephilim show up a lot in the Bible, or is it an Enoch-specific thing?
It's pretty much an Enoch thing.
Yeah.
There is talk of these creatures, but they're not giants. They are, I think, warriors of old. It's so clearly an old story that was taken from another tradition and kind of mixed in. And you have the different books of Genesis because these are different generations of people being like, that didn't really make any sense. Let's rewrite that. Like there's two creation myths at the beginning, right? The newer creation myth and then the older creation myth, because the newer one was the one that people liked. And the older one was like, oh, that one wasn't very good. So let's make a new one.
Reboot.
Yeah. And the Book of Enoch then, hundreds of years later, is the same kind of thing. Damn, the flood was really bad. There must have been really bad stuff for God to do that. And they're like, yeah, maybe those Nephilim were like horrible creature things and there was all this horrible sex and stuff. Like the Book of Enoch as fan fiction is to kind of help explain why the flood happened, because the feeling was, it seems a little bit harsh.
Yeah.
God, it seems like a bit of a, it's like it escalated quickly.
Yeah.
In the original Genesis. So that's what it means.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
So God didn't like it. He sends the great flood. All right. Now it's time to suggest the idea that these Nephilim aren't just horny angels, but they're in fact horny aliens. Childress, you gotta wonder what was really going on here. Are they coming and now breeding with humans, which was somehow forbidden and wrong, but they did it anyway. So the other extraterrestrials said, this is a big mistake. Now we've got to destroy all these people. Astronaut theorists say yes to the question of mutant race of giants. Hell yeah. Toby likes to talk about Göbekli Tepe, don't you? That's what you're hot on. Or at least you like to complain about it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is ground zero for, as like Book of Enoch is to ancient aliens, so is Göbekli Tepe to pseudo-archaeology.
Yeah, so there's kind of a couple of places they're going to use to hammer home this point that are in different parts of the world. Basically, it's look at all these things that are underwater that look like they're advanced cities, and they got flooded 9 to 10,000 years ago, and there's some big stones under there, all to suggest that we used to have these great cities. Neighborhoods gone to hell as a result of God flooding the planet, or aliens flooding the planet, or whatever. Atlantis. Major, do you think it's unfair that Atlantis gets all of the press as the great lost city just because Plato wrote about it?
It's been said a million times. Plato did not say that it was a great city. It was an evil city, and it went to war with Athens, and Athens defeated them. It was almost a throwaway story. It was a story about, could a perfect society exist? And the perfect society was ancient Athens. It wasn't Atlantis.
Yeah.
It was actually in the 19th century. And the writings, I forget the name now, of the dude who wrote this book about Atlantis and came up with pretty much everything that is the modern story. That was only like 150 years ago. That if you look at Plato, like there, so much of this stuff is not from his writings. But every time it comes up, I'm just like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, but it is the famous one, whatever the case, whether it deserves it or not. I'm just saying right. It's the famous one. I'm just saying it's the famous sunken city.
Oh, totally.
Or continent. That's the thing that really pisses me off. Like, get your scale right. Is it a city?
Exactly.
Or is it a fucking continent?
Growing up, totally thought, of course this existed. Of course this was real. Yep. There was a place. They just need to find it. And maybe they found little bits of it here and there, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I learned this from listening to Strange Arrivals, podcast about alien abduction, and I've learned it from Monster Talk with Blake, which is go to the source.
Yeah.
Try to find the oldest version of that story. It usually isn't the one that people are telling now because it gets elaborated and changed and adapted and so on and so forth. But something that the show doesn't seem to understand is that all religion is current. We are interpreting it now for the lives that we lead now. Their process is like, this is an eyewitness testimony. They wrote down exactly what they saw. Like, as you guys often say, they don't seem to have a capability to understand what metaphor is.
But they are building it in real time. It's sort of like the way memory works, which is not fishing a picture out. It's rethinking, revisiting that part of the brain. And every time you remember something, we know you're just recreating it. So over time, it distorts. You have memories that then are warped into something totally different over a period of time. You know, that's how all stories work. Obviously, that's what you're saying, how religion works. And I think this show, too, if we look at some of the stuff from later seasons versus earlier seasons, I feel like they've even been building on this in a way. And it's not just because of the budget. It's not just because they finally got dinosaur smashing rocks that don't look like they bounce. There's the story. It seems like it's evolving a little bit, too, I think.
Yeah, there's like sort of a meta-analysis of ancient aliens following into the same habits that it ascribes to ancient peoples and their view of aliens or whatever, or myths, where ancient aliens looks and it's like, this is something that we can't explain, or at least we can pretend we can't explain. And then we'll create this myth around it involving aliens in order to explain it. They don't seem very self-aware of what they're doing, but it is, it's a very similar process.
Now we're getting to one of my absolute favorite parts of this episode, or perhaps any other. We've just established that Atlantis is the best ideal place, despite what Pedro said. And maybe all these places got smashed to pieces because of a catastrophic event, possibly aliens. And we're going to figure out what evidence exists, not by what was destroyed, but by what survived. And then they go to commercial break, a great break, with glowing baby eyes.
Yes.
Which is fantastic.
So psyched.
Didn't see that coming.
So incredible. Psyched. Incredible. So now Dead Sea Scrolls. We're in Palestine, 1946. Yeah. We have Kathleen McGowan Coppins, who's Philip Coppins' widow at this point.
Widow.
He passes away.
Widow at this point.
Yeah. Okay. This is the story of Noah, you guys. And she says, God bless it. They're trying to describe Noah. She says, and the story is that when Noah is born, he's an extraordinary baby with a strange complexion and the ability to light up the room with his eyes. I mean, the sexy fucking baby.
Yeah, light up the room. Get that kid to Vegas.
Yeah.
He's going to be a hit. He's going to be big.
You're like looking at the bassinet and you're like, damn, I could not take my eyes off of that baby.
No, he literally lights up the room, yeah. Guys. We need to do something about this.
And so that's not good enough. I mean, obviously now you've got this fucking sexy baby that everybody's just so charmed about. But the problem is that Noah's dad is like, I do not have glow-in-the-dark eyes like this. Yeah. I believe my wife may have had a dalliance with one of these fallen angels. He confronts his wife.
Is it my son or is it one of theirs?
Which is the biblical version of feeling like you've walked into a cafe, into a conversation that you just don't want to overhear. Back out of that one.
Why does our kid look like the mailman?
Thoughts on this sequence, how it was put together, or just anything?
The thing that they don't explain or discuss, because they start by like the Dead Sea Scrolls. And the way the narrator says that, you're obviously supposed to think like hidden truth, secret stories or whatever. This is stuff from the Book of Noah. And the Book of Noah, much like the Book of Enoch, is a collection of fan fiction written many, many, many years after Genesis, which again was a way to kind of be like looking back at the Book of Genesis and being like, doesn't really say much about Noah, does it? Ooh, we should come up with a backstory, which is similar in Christianity to the birth myth of Jesus, which came long after his time and after the initial writings for the same reasons. Was he always Son of God? Was he just born normally? No. And it's the same thing with the Book of Noah, where it's like, well, he must have been something special. God picked him. It's fantastical fan fiction written long after. And again, for the uses of society at that time, which were obsessed with these issues with messianic times and end times and stuff like that.
And was it true that he lit up the room with his eye?
Oh, yeah. No, that part is true.
Yeah.
That part is true.
All right, so logically, Pierre, God is mad by this. Any product of angels and sex with humans, well, Noah's an example of that. God should have wiped out Noah. Instead, he tells him, make a boat. Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to carry this guy forward and all of his stuff, or are you trying to cleanse the earth? Anyway, that was very confusing to me. A little bit of a plot hole, which this show doesn't have a lot of, so that one really jumped out.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Jonathan Young says, the gods would guide us and they would be tempted. There would be interaction. The god might marry a mortal. There would be descendants of the gods. Now they seem so far away. Our narrator says, could it be that the great flood removed not only most living creatures from the earth, but also any trace of the alien beings that gave birth to our species? Perhaps additional clues can be found by further examining the story of Noah and how he survived. Now we get into the boat. Mount Ararat, that's one I remember, Pedro, like you're talking about with the Bermuda Triangle. There was one of those CBS specials or something that came out. This must have been the 80s or 90s. You remember this, where they're like, we found what looks like on the top of Mount Ararat, a boat-shaped thing. It was like a big deal, right?
Late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
It was? Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. It was when they used to make movies about that stuff. Like, I used to go and see quote-unquote documentaries about, like, Bigfoot, like, all the time. That used to be something you could do. Yeah, and that was one of them. And I remember being a little bit creeped out by the ad, just being like, oh, shit.
That's why it stuck with me. It should have been like, this proves the literal truth of the Bible. Yeah. Aren't we thrilled? Yeah. But instead, it's something just ominous and creepy. And also, like, how big is Mount Ararat? How can you not see a giant-ass boat on the top of it?
Yeah, they get to Suklos saying that he thinks the Ark is actually a metaphor.
There it is. Yeah.
That line.
So what if the Ark was a metaphor or a symbol?
Done.
Yeah.
The show can go off the air. It's over.
Nailed it.
Oh, finally.
Yeah. We cherish those moments when the clouds part for a minute, but then you see it all come crashing down when he finishes the sentence. Was it a metaphor or a symbol for some type of a DNA bank?
That's, This show is absurd at that point. Because I think Childress comes in and even he looks like, I do not buy this. This is nonsense, man.
I'm getting a bonus if I'm saying this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He sort of looked like Orson Welles in that, speaking of funny commercials, the wine commercial where he's just drunk as shit.
Yeah. Ah, the French champagne. has always been celebrated for its excellence.
We'll sell no wine before it's time.
Even Childress was like, all right, so we're saying that
sure
we needed to save life on Earth with this ark. So we'll use animal and plant DNA and human DNA and preserve it in this boat in this very advanced way. But we're going to store it all in a big wooden boat. What? I don't know.
Where was Wilcock during all this? Like, he's usually the guy who's willing to come in and just like say some crazy shit.
I think this may have come from Arthur C. Clarke. Songs of the Distant Earth. The Earth is coming to an end, and so Earth is just sending out ships to distant planets in the hope to keep the human race alive. They send essentially DNA. They send like seeds of life.
Which was thought out for Man of Steel, the previous Superman thing. The Kryptonians' genetic information was encoded into their weird matrix thing, which turned out to be the skull of what looked like a Neanderthal or some kind of ancient thing. And then, of course, as we all know, it was downloaded into the genetic material of Superman himself. And that's why Zod had to come after him, because he wanted to extract that so that he could resurrect Krypton on Earth by doing some terraforming with the world engine.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
Words, 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 words.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Norway. Now this is the moment of actual science that I'm really interested in. I'll sit through all kind of bullshit to hear somebody talk about the Svalbard seed vault. They're keeping examples of all these different seeds from all around the world so that if the shit does hit the fan, you know where to go buy your seeds. It's the food store, Toby. It's the world's food store, basically, if you want to think about it that way. It's like an inverted metaphor. Svalbard's seed vault is a real place where they are storing these seeds, but they're using it as a metaphor to explain the thing that they're calling real, which is Noah's Ark, this seed vault thing, right? That exists, and that therefore proves that the aliens did this other thing.
Essentially, folks have figured out formulas to make pop music work. Right? I wonder if on this show, they have figured out this is when this expert needs to come in, and then we need a clip of somebody in the field, and then we need this, and then we need this thing near the end. And this poor woman is like, why are you talking to me about aliens? We have seeds here.
Yeah. I did get something useful out of it. Kirsten Fisher is the one who's talking about the seed vault. Interestingly, she is at Cal State LA, and they're doing something where they're digitizing the herbarium's plant collection as part of this California-wide collaboration to understand the effects of climate change on flowering time. And so I took that information, and I'm going to reach out to her. I was like, hell, this is an actual story. She's doing something really interesting.
Yes.
That's called a lead.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Brandon. Where'd you get an idea for this story? Well, I was watching Ancient Aliens, The Great Flood.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watch Ancient Aliens, but
yeah,
I've got a little podcast about it I do when I'm at home.
I had not thought about my approach strategy. It's true. Also interesting to note that England has a Millennium Seed Bank, and apparently there's one in Fort Collins, Colorado. So the one in Svalbard everybody talks about, that's the Atlantis, Pedro, of seed vaults. Nobody knows about the others.
So why didn't they just go to the one that was in Boulder, Colorado?
It's a good fucking question.
That one's probably like in a mall.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? It's like fluorescent lighting and stuff, whereas this one looked cool.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%.
You got that thing sticking out of the living rock, so that's a lot of fun. You have to sort of land this comet, I guess, at some point. Linda Moulton Howe comes in, along with Tsoukalos, and they're kind of optimistic. They suggest that the evolution of humans has been an experiment on the part of extraterrestrials, certainly a theme we've explored a lot. Instead of trying to destroy us, which has been the whole thesis of this fucking episode,
yes,
by the way, the whole point is that we kept fucking up, or that the aliens were having sex with our girls. And so, you know, there had to be a reckoning. Instead of all that, they say, maybe they're just trying to get us over some kind of a finish line, which I don't understand why throwing rocks from space at us is the way to do that. It started to seem like they were dealing with stuff with like abusive parents, like that were pushing them too hard as kids or something. It's like, y'all are working your own shit out here. I don't know.
It gets stupid, but it doesn't quite go off the rails as much as someone's do. We've probably done about 30 episodes at this point, and we're already getting so many stories retold again and again and again.
Maybe if we could get the scripts for all the episodes, for all the seasons,
there you go.
Feed them into an AI and be like, what the fuck is this show about? Like, is there one super narrative above everything else? Because you guys would know this better than me, having watched so many episodes. It feels as if they're contradicting each other from episode to episode.
I feel like it's a little bit like the X-Files, where there's some episodes are like canon, and then the other episodes are sort of monster of the week.
Yeah.
And I think the canon is really about extraterrestrials manipulating the development of humans, both in their DNA and then giving them nudges in particular directions at different parts of history. But then occasionally you get like aliens in the Civil War. To date, that's the only time that any alien has disguised themselves as the ghost of George Washington. That's not something that's recurred throughout history, is like aliens disguising themselves as ghosts of great men who have come before. It'd be interesting to do like back-to-back, one from like the first or second season and then one from like the most recent season, and just be like, how's it evolved?
This is what I also find hilarious, though, is the study that you guys give to this show. Yeah. I suspect if the producers of the show of Ancient Aliens could hear what you guys are doing, they would be like, oh, stop. No one's even supposed to watch a whole episode in one go. Never mind analyzing them.
Toby's stroke of genius was to do this achronologically, which I think does not do much for our sanity or our ability to perceive what's really going on. But it certainly keeps things lively. We're like, okay, what does this mean? We're on season 7 compared to the last one we just did was season 20. Can we learn anything from moving back in time? We're not being very systematic about it.
I want to have somebody do a similar analysis for more like Ancient Valians. Right. We need to have many degrees of remove. Yeah, what does our commentary on Ancient Aliens have to say about modern American culture?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Late capitalism.
I know that we have gotten a lot of good ideas for cults. I know that I would want to do the French chalet that we blow up with explosives.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's one thing I learned.
I want to go dig in Belgium.
Yeah.
That looked great.
Yeah.
We got to get a budget so we can go on location for some of this stuff.
Hell yeah.
It would have been nice if you'd found that pyramid that's in Los Angeles.
I looked for that. Couldn't even find any evidence that was a thing. That was sad.
It was mentioned.
All right. Pedro Mendez, thank you so much for coming on. As always, it's just a delight to have you.
You got to give the address for your miniatures Instagram.
I was getting to that, Toby, but please do.
I'm sorry. Sorry. It's your show. It's your show.
No.
This is the kind of shit that ends shows.
See, the show about this show.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, you know, it was in that episode.
It all began.
Yeah, that's right. And then we've got 200 people we can interview. Our staff, obviously. Yeah. There's a lot of backstory.
So it is my name, Pedro.Mendez, and that's Mendez with an S, .miniature. And actually, if you just go into search engine, just type in Pedro Mendez miniature, that'll take you to it.
There you go. It's anything cool else you want to plug?
I am, maybe by the time this episode comes out, I'm working on a much bigger photo series.
Ooh.
It's based very much on a sort of Twilight Zone, Last Man Left on Earth type of idea, but there's actually aliens.
Hello.
Yes. There is an alien intelligence that is attempting to create a world based on my thoughts and memories.
Holy
shit. And it does not work. I'm working on that whole photo series, and I hope to have it done in the next couple months.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Got to let us know. We'll share it around.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Pedro. It has been a delight. And again, we're glad to have you, and we'll have you on again very shortly. But for now, we have proven that this flood was the greatest of all floods, the greatest flood of all. is happening to us. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time.
Next time on More Like Ancient Phalians. Harkening back to the great road trip movies of the golden age of cinema, Giorgio Tsoukalos and Linda Moulton Howe go on a field trip, and hijinks and romance ensue. We are headed to the most famous UFO site on the planet as we look at The Relics of Roswell. That's season 15, episode 2. As this odd couple kicks up dust around the Southwest, we go metal detecting in the desert, check out an aluminum lozenge that's as pure as your soup can, and watch the sparks fly between Linda and her Roswell geologist. Also, you 100% won't want to miss the explosive cratering. See you next week.
More Like Ancient Phalians is a Grab Bag collab production. Our intrepid editor and producer is Gabby Lombardo, and our music is by Nathan Reedy.
If you listen to this and you feel so moved, if you could leave us a rating, it helps with discoverability. It's the best way of getting the word out, unless you want to like yell out your window or post on social media or something.
I endorse that.
Turn camera.
Marked.
102, take one.
With overlap, action please. Action awesome, please.
Just do anything?
No, it's sorry, cut.